WNST, Towson Baltimore. Baltimore positive. We're positively into a fresh week. We have a home game this week. I didn't know the Ravens play home games this week, but the Maryland Crab Cake Tour no longer on hiatus. The Orioles are done. I'm putting together some Crab Cake Tour stops. We got one at Hollywood Casino. We got one coming up at Coco's Pub. We're going to be over Costas. We're going to be back at Pappas up in Hunt Valley as well. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll have these Ravens scratch-offs to give away. We'll have a full schedule out. It was my birthday over the weekend. Still sort of toweling off after the Orioles experience when we had the whole calendar together. We would have had very chilly ALCS game on Sunday night here, and instead we had a very early wake-up call. We were up at Hollywood Casino in Perryville. Had a phenomenal time. We had about 100 people out. We had prizes. We had fun. The game wasn't as compelling. I guess it was compelling in that. And Luke, I got to bring you in on this. There was a point, and I'm not kidding you, there was a point in the third quarter of the game where I literally went on my phone looking for out-of-town scores. And I'm like, dude, it's 11 o'clock in the morning. There's no other game. Stop that, you know? So there was a point where I'm in a casino and I'm like, oh, where are the other games? You know, but the whole 9:30 in the morning thing, the strangest thing for me and you, we were at the London game last time. We go to most of the games, had gone to all the games. Watching on TV at 9:30 in the morning, it was a little strange, and they played like it was a little strange, I thought.
Yeah, it definitely was strange, and I think anytime you have a team going to London, and maybe the Jaguars are the example to this because they've gone so frequently, and they just play back-to-back games in London even, you're wondering how a team's going to respond. There's so much debate as far as how you approach it. I mean, the Ravens this time around went on Monday. They flew out to London and spent the entire week there, allowed the body clocks to adjust and get proper sleep and get acclimated, give players a little bit of time to, you know, do a little bit of sightseeing, maybe not too much of that. And then there's the
I hope they went to the Churchill bunker because that's the only thing that matters there. But nonetheless, yeah. Yes.
But then there's the opposite approach where you do what the Tennessee Titans did or what the Ravens did last time around, and that's not fly in until Thursday. It's fascinating. When we talk about this all the time, and I think it's been mentioned a whole lot with turf and grass and that whole debate with quality of fields or lack thereof. But I think when you see it play out the way that it did Sunday, and I'm with you. I mean, it wasn't this impressive performance from the Ravens, but I think certainly compared to 6 years ago, they handled themselves far better from a football standpoint.
Well, the only impressive thing in London is to get on the plane you won. Right. You come home. Right. That's the only thing that can be. I thought the game was, I mean, most of the games over there are very disjointed. Right. I mean, they don't play great football when they go over there. It's like Thursday night football. It's not great football. It's not designed to be. Right.
It typically you're right. Right. I mean, there have been a couple good games in London over the years, but for the most part, and full disclosure, I haven't watched too many. Some of them are on ESPN Plus. A lot of them I've been in church, quite frankly, you know, if it happens to be a Sunday where I'm not covering the Ravens in person.
Deacon Jones is sacking the altar, not the quarterback.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. So it is different. And so from that standpoint, that's where I look at this win. I look at this game as just kind of a checkoff game. I think the one thing that I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, when you get to the point of the storm of adversity they faced in that third quarter, and the defense was reminded by NFL officiating that it's not 1999 anymore, or it's not 2012 anymore. They handled that better than they certainly did against Pittsburgh last week. They handled it better than they did against Indianapolis a few weeks ago. So to step in the right direction in that regard. In terms of perception of the victory, I mean, I already looking early Monday morning for the Albert Breers of the world. There wasn't a whole lot said about this game. Part of it is the 9:30 start. I think that's just reality. But I think a big part of it is I think most people don't regard the Tennessee Titans as a very good football team. So a win is a win.
Especially against their backup quarterback at the end, right? You knocked their quarterback out, Kyle Hamilton hit, like, all, you know, the game itself, and then the goal line stuff. I mean, the real lead story here is not being able to punch the ball and kicking too many field goals, and whether that's good or bad. And then the fact that if Ryan Tannehill had been on the field, I have a feeling they might have lost. I mean, he was kind of fearless in standing in the pocket and delivering the ball like a veteran would be. I saw him at the beginning of the game. It's like he didn't even see the pass rush, and then he got killed because of it, obviously, right? But I thought, like, They're really lucky they got away with what they got away with. I felt like they got away with one. They got lucky.
I'm not going to go as far as lucky. Ryan Tannehill wasn't good in that game either. I they have a better chance, certainly. I mean,
well, that kid had no chance.
Yeah.
Once they bring, I mean, we've seen that for 6 weeks now. 5 of the 6 weeks, we've seen backup quarterbacks, and we see what the other teams, Tyler Huntley, what your odds are of winning with Gardner Minshew, or I shouldn't say that, but when you have these backup quarterbacks and you get them into the game in the third quarter, it's back to the Rich Gannon, Bobby Hoying days. And I saw the same thing with the Raiders. They brought Hoyer instead of Hoying in. It's just when I put the games on at 4 o'clock and there's backup quarterbacks, it's hard enough to win with your starting quarterback. But if you're running around out there with some guy I've never heard of, forget it. You can't win.
Yeah, there are very, very few backups in this league where you feel like you have much of a chance. But and look, I agree with your general point. Malik Willis was very reminiscent of what we saw when the Browns put out a fifth round rookie starting. You saw the Browns go with PJ Walker this week, and they fared a little bit better, still mainly because of their defense. But yeah, this was a game that I think if you're the Ravens, you're happy to come home with the victory. The defense played well. The offense moved well between the 20s, which, by the way, was something they did a lot under Greg Roman a year ago. And the issue was they could not score touchdowns inside the red zone. And we saw this red zone offense get off to a great start. I mean, they had scored touchdowns on 80% of their trips inside the red zone in their first four games. And the last 2 weeks, that's gone sideways. So it's just the latest issue with this offense that's kind of keeping it back, holding it back from being really good or great. You know, we see the potential, but the consistency wasn't there. They couldn't run the ball inside the 20 whatsoever. You know, I think a week ago, the question was, why didn't Todd Monken run the ball more inside the 20s or inside the 20, I should say specifically. And a week later, they did that. They didn't run it effectively. So the question is, why didn't they throw it a little bit more? So I think for him, I'm seeing some instances where he's struggling with the feel of the game. I think players are certainly struggling to execute in some key spots, but where I do credit this football team, and as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, when you look at how that third quarter was playing out, you know, the Michael Pierce penalty, what happened right after that, the Kyle Hamilton penalty, which was a penalty, the ejection, which, you know, that's certainly up for debate, you know, him being ejected in that
spot. By the way, let me bring that up. You hit a guy in the head on the crown of the head and he's in the tent on the other side. You should probably go to the shower. I mean, that's to me, that should be the spirit of the rule. You hurt somebody with your head, you're out of the game. That way, maybe you'll think twice before you leave with your head and you hit on the crown of the head. And you don't have time to think twice. The game's too fast. I hear all of that. But I don't really have a problem with that. I didn't have a problem with Kyle Hamilton walking off the field in shame after putting a guy into shock trauma. You know what I mean? Like, so there's part of that that's the way the game should be adjudicated. You heard Michael Pierce, you want to land on the quarterback? You want to play Tony Siragusa 2001? Go home, think about it. We'll send you a bill for 25 grand or whatever the league's going to fine you for doing whatever you're doing to hurt a quarterback. I don't have any complaint with that. I really don't. And I feel like if you're going to take out the other team's player, you get to watch the game too. And I think that's in the spirit of Little League rules. It should be in the spirit of the NFL. If you hurt somebody in that way, and it looks like, I don't say intentional, but you could have done not a leg injury, not any, but landing on guy. I mean, I thought that was a little dirty. I mean, I don't know the Ravens have any reputation for that, but I thought, you know, in a vacuum for a game, I thought they did some dirty stuff, and I thought that they paid for it. I mean, the penalties speak to the fact that they were breaking the rules.
We're gonna have to disagree on some of that.
Okay.
The Hamilton hit was a penalty. There's no question about that. 1,000% a penalty. What you're suggesting is a suggestion of what you think it should be compared to what's the actual rule, because I see hits like that in the NFL every week that are penalized. Rightfully penalized,
but what takes you out of the game? What disqualifies?
Right. And this is where we start, you know, we start approaching the territory that we see in college football on a weekly basis now with the targeting rule, that it's a specific rule in place regardless of intent, that if it's targeting, you're ejected. You know, if the NFL wants to go in that direction, I mean, I will hear that. I suppose I will say that I hate the targeting rule in college football, and I think it's overly overly penalizing to incidental contact at times.
It's a fast game, Luke. There's no question.
Really where I get into this, Nestor. And even with Michael Pierce, I mean, this wasn't. Look, I see why they called what they did. Do I think he went down with his 100% of his body weight? No, not even close. This wasn't even close to the Tony Siragusa driving Rich Gannon into the ground. But I see why they called that. I can live with that one. I certainly agree with Hamilton being penalized. Him being ejected, that's where I struggle with that a little bit more. You know, that I don't think that was him going for a kill shot as much as it was a high pass. He was going to play the ball. He was going to make a hit to try to knock the ball out, and he hit Chris Moore, former Raven, in the helmet. 1,000% a penalty. 1,000% going to be a fine for him. The ejection, that's where I just struggle, because then, you know, for me, we're getting into territory of, you know, how do you judge intent? You know,
well, the other part of it, and this is, if I still had access to John Harbaugh and Chad Steele and take it away, John would say, well, how do you want me to teach it? How do you want me to teach?
Right.
How could he do it differently so he wouldn't get ejected and he wouldn't get a penalty? And that's really where, you know, where they all earn their money on a week, as well as the officials, as well as I'll throw this to Roger Goodell and the people that are concerned that a DeMar Hamlin situation actually happened. A kid almost died on the field last year. I have been predicting that for, you know, since the team got here in 96, as well as people dying in the upper deck from fights, because that's the way this goes when you gather 80,000 people on a Sunday. But I would say, in the spirit of the rules and what they're trying to do to make the game safer, I looked at it. I looked at it twice and thought, like, well, teach it differently, coach it differently, play it differently, and don't hit the guy with your head. I mean, we've been saying that for 20 years. Don't hit the guy with your head.
Yeah. And like I said, it was a penalty. I'm not at all saying it was not a penalty. And even with the reality of the last 10 to 15 years where helmet to helmet, even if it's a situation where a wide receiver ducks, quite frankly, and a defensive back is actually trying to hit him in, say, the chest or the stomach, and the receiver ducks, and then you hit him in the head, you know,
or you hit your teammate in the head. We've seen tons of friendly fire.
Sure.
Right?
So, but on the flip side, you know, to what you just said, is if you're John Harbaugh, if you're the coaching staff, how do you teach that? Unfortunately, a lot of it is, well, guys are going to make catches downfield. Guys are going to make plays over the middle. Tom Brady famously talked about this a couple years ago about how there is no penalty whatsoever within the context of the game itself, like it was 20 years ago, for a wide receiver to go over the middle. You know, wide receivers can be much more fearless now going over the middle than was the case 20 years ago, certainly 30 or 40 years ago, with how the game works. But going back to the point I was making at the time of that, this was very clearly a point in the game where things were going sideways for this football team. With the penalties, you saw Derrick Henry break off his two longest runs of the ball game immediately after those two penalties on back-to-back drives. Those two penalties and then those two runs right after those penalties led to 10 Titans points that took a 15-point halftime lead down to a one-score game. And on the other side of the ball, Lamar Jackson throws the pick. They go 3-and-out. What is everyone in Baltimore, as they're having their morning coffee or maybe a morning beverage, thinking right at that moment?
Seen this movie before.
Here we go again. And then Geno Stone comes away with, to me, the turning point play of the football game, where Tennessee was starting to get the running game going a little bit, not just with Derrick Henry, but also with the rookie Spears. And it's 3rd and 2. Tannehill throws deep. He makes a really good play on the ball. And keep in mind, Geno Stone was in the game for Kyle Hamilton because he had been ejected, of course. And he comes away with a big interception, similar to what we saw in Cincinnati back in week 2. And that was the turning point. From that point on, it wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, let's be clear. But the offense at least sustained a couple drives, chewed, 11 and a half minutes off the clock in those two drives that followed that interception. They got a couple field goals, and they put themselves in a position where, at that point, Malik Willis was in the game. Tennessee, they were meandering their way down the field. They get the big play to Spears, but at that point, assuming the Ravens were going to recover the onside kick, it still didn't really feel like the outcome was in doubt at that point in time. So, big play for Geno Stone, someone who has epitomized you know, the idea of taking advantage of your opportunities when you get on the field, make some plays. And he's done that for them. He's been big for that defense with Marcus Williams being on and off the field through the first 6 weeks of the season. So, you know, in that regard, I was glad to see them finish. It wasn't an emphatic finish by any stretch of the imagination, but they at least weathered the storm of adversity in that third quarter and did enough to win the football game. Was that a performance that was going to beat really good teams or great teams around the NFL? Probably not. But at the same time, that's when you remind yourself, take a look around the rest of the league. Kansas City, choppy effort on Thursday night. Bills, very choppy effort on Sunday night against a bad Giants team. San Francisco lost. Philadelphia lost. I mean, this league is, you know, there are some teams I think that we believe are going to be great, but I'm not sure that there are too many teams that truly are great at this point in the NFL season, which I feel like we say every October. You know, we say every time, every year, right around this time. But
look, just give the Jets some time. They're rounding into things. The Jets are getting better.
The defense is good. I'll say this. I'll be say what you want about Zach.
But even
Wilson,
these bad teams, to your point, I mean, teams we think of as they can't win. And the best teams this week all scuffled. And we're in the middle of the season. There's no undefeated teams all of a sudden. We're not even through the ALCS yet, right? And so on any given week, I would agree with you. I just have this expectation of the offseason of Odell Beckham, of Todd Monken, of the offense, of all these number one draft picks. We're going to throw. We're going to run. We're afraid to run Lamar now. We're afraid to run Lamar at the goal line. And you and I will do a whole segment on goal line offense and what's going on that. And, like, we'll see the Lions this week. Are they good or are they not? The Chargers, we're going to see them in a couple weeks. I don't know what they are. I thought Arizona might be more competitive. I watched them play at 4 o'clock Sunday. They stink. I mean, better take care of business with that 2 weeks from now. And now we have these three NFC games in a row. They haven't played at home in a month. The baseball team's over with, so we have no oxygen. We're not sitting here talking about, you know, what Ryan Mountcastle did last night or whether Adley Rutschman's going to call a game tonight or not. That's all over with. So it's a full focus for us. Luke is here. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. I'm putting some dates together. We had 25th anniversary stuff that I'm going to be getting out to the website. I thought I was traveling. I thought we were going to be in Houston or Minnesota or Texas or Bemidji. I thought I was going to be at Camden Yards this week for something other than a football game. But Lions in town this week. Luke can be found at Baltimore Luke. Things have settled down now. There's no more batting cages. There's no more clubhouse badges. There's no more worrying about, are we playing Atlanta or Philadelphia or Los Angeles? And do you have tickets for games? All that's over with. It's football. And all football here. Terps lost on Sunday as well. We'll talk some more about that as we go through all of this. And that was a terrible loss for the Terps this weekend to Illinois. Luke can be found at Baltimore Luke. I can be found anywhere the internet travels. Luke and I get in the same room together. We were in the same room together twice in the same week last week. We went to Texas together, and then we went to Drug City together at the Fountain on Friday and had some proper milkshakes, celebrated my birthday. My son came by. Chuck came by. Luke came by. My dear science teacher friend George Shulin came by. So if you hear any of that during the course of the week, in addition to all the other stuff and Andy Summers and all the other stuff we'll be doing around here, it's John Mayer week here. I should just take the week off. He's Luke. I'm Nestor. Back for more. We got a lot of football around here, some baseball residue as well. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.